This episode of the Think Outside the Lens podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/OTL podcast. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Visit audibletrial.com/OTL podcast to get started today.
You're listening to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. Practical solutions and ideas for designing the life you want with an added dose of inspiration. Here's your host, Sean Feeney.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. My mission with this show is simple. I want to help you improve your life. In each episode, I talk to people who are designing the lives of their dreams. I believe that if they can do it, so can you. And these conversations are meant to inspire you to take action and to pursue the life you've always wanted to live. I'm Sean, and you can find me over at thinkoutsidethelens.com, where we explore these ideas further. My guest today is an up-and-coming filmmaker. He just directed his first feature-length film, Fear, Inc., which was just released on iTunes, Amazon, and other streaming services. We discuss life, ambition, purpose, following your dreams, and I'm confident you will find our conversation inspiring. It's time to Think Outside the Lines with Vince Michelli. All right, Vince Michelli, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Sean?
Pretty awesome. So I always start out my interviews with a little icebreaker lightning round of questions, which kind of helps people get to know you a bit before we dive in. Are you ready?
Yes.
Tell me about someone that you admire and why.
As a filmmaker, I've got a pretty stereotypical person that I've been following since I was a kid. Like, I'm obsessed with Steven Spielberg, and mainly because of kind of how his career trajectory has gone since he was a young filmmaker to now. I'm not necessarily obsessed with every single one of his films or even his overall filmmaking style. It's more of just kind of how he's made a career out of telling stories, out of telling really compelling stories. And he's branched out into TV. He's done video games. He's, every format of entertainment he's like dipped his toes into and really tried to, in any aspect, tell just incredible, amazing stories that we've never seen before. Even, you know, with his most recent film, Bridge of Spies wasn't my favorite film at all, but, like, he's just telling a unique story from a different perspective, and he always just finds stuff that's different. And I never feel like, as someone who's doing this for their career, he's doing it for a paycheck or doing it because someone else is telling him. He's really telling a story because he cares about it and feels like other people need to hear that story, which I admire a lot.
Totally. I admire that too. What's your favorite Spielberg film?
Probably Jurassic Park. And that may be because, I mean, it's an amazing film and it still holds up today. But I also saw it when I was really young and was just like mesmerized by every frame of that film.
Totally. I agree with that. I would say that probably in E.T.
E.T. is fantastic. It's a great movie. I just went as E.T. for Halloween.
I was going to say, you guys all went as, yeah, I saw that. Yep. Awesome.
That's cool.
Did you like the new Jurassic Park by chance?
It was okay. It was, I felt like it was entertaining. It didn't, in my mind, it did not capture any of the magic of the original.
Really? I totally disagree. I mean,
I did. My favorite parts of the movie was when they stumbled upon the old, was it a warehouse or wherever they went in and they saw the old Jeep and the old X-ray goggles. That was my favorite part where they were referencing the original film. And I thought it was fun. It wasn't a bad movie at all. I felt like the creating a new dinosaur storyline was a little
contrived.
It was a little contrived, and then it felt like no character in the movie really solved. And I guess this is kind of the original same thing, but like, the original T-Rex comes and saves the day, and I was like, it was kind of fun, but I don't know.
I guess it
fell apart for me in a few different areas.
Yeah, and you know what? I can align with you on that. I can actually align too with the magic of the first one not being captured, because I do agree there was something particularly magical about the first one. I think for me, this new one was more, compared to the other sequels, this one I felt like I wanted to be in that world and I was excited to be in that world. And maybe it's because it had been so long since I had been. But I felt like I was having that like amazing experience. Potentially also.
Yeah. And I did like how they, you know, ever since seeing the first one, I think everyone's dream was like, I want to see a running Jurassic Park.
Totally.
And I think they captured that really, really well.
Yeah.
Like the first act of the movie, I was just like mesmerized. I was like, this is cool. You get to see a really, you know, a functioning park and it's not breaking down. And then of course it breaks down and, I don't know.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler. It's been long enough.
Now, I know that we share a mutual love for technology. So what do you think is the greatest invention in your lifetime and why?
Oh, man.
I know. I got to narrow it down.
Greatest invention of my lifetime. Well, we come from the... I don't remember exactly how old you are. I think we're similar in age. But we come from the generation where we didn't have computers and internet when we were kids.
Yes.
So to me, the internet is like... is the most, I can't think of how I would do my job or live my life without the internet. And I did it for the first, you know, whatever, 11, 12 years of my life. And I think the internet's incredible. Now, modern inventions like my iPhone, I don't know what I would do without my iPhone. I think it's incredible. Although I think you've jumped off the iPhone bandwagon, haven't you?
No.
Oh, you haven't?
Don't spread those vicious lies, please.
Okay.
You know what's funny? I did
didn't
actually.
Did you get an Android?
I did for like. Literally, I had a, I won't say the name of the brand, but for eight days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I just couldn't get into, you know what, it's a debate that people are very passionate about. I'm not particularly, like, passionate about the debate. I just prefer the iOS experience.
Yeah.
Android is too cluttered and convoluted for me. I can't figure, like, I pick one up, and I consider myself pretty tech savvy. I pick one of those things up, and I just feel lost.
Why did you switch in the first place?
Because the hardware on that particular device was like gorgeous and I felt like Apple hadn't really been innovating in a while. So I was like, let's try this out. But yeah, I went back literally 8 days later.
Which version of the iPhone were you on when you switched?
5 or 5S, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. It was, no one's going to sue me. It was the HTC One. I just felt like that was a really cool looking piece of hardware when it first came out. The iteration, the new version is like basically an iPhone ripoff. But I felt like they were really the only ones that were like innovating in that space. And I just felt it was a gorgeous piece of hardware. And I wanted to check it out. But yeah, wasn't for me. No offense.
It is funny how like my parents have gone back and forth. They started with Androids and then they couldn't deal. So then they got iPhones for a few years and then they just recently switched back. And we were just at their house this weekend down in Orange County. And I was helping them set up some stuff with their TVs and using their phones. And I was like, And it's probably been 4 or 5 years since I've touched an Android.
Yeah.
And I was just like, where is the, how do you get to your app store? What is it called? It was just like, there's so many different home screens and there's something about a user interface that I think, you know, we've heard Steve Jobs talk about over and over and over again, and you can innovate all you want, but if you don't have a good user experience, ultimately what is innovation really? Like if you're adding new stuff to the phone and you can't get to it or if it's difficult or whatever, you know, what's the point? You need something that's user friendly and intuitive.
No, I think it's interesting what you said about technology and the internet in particular, because I did grow up in a generation where I got to go outside and play and didn't even know what would be on a screen one day that would carry, you know, I'd carry around in my pocket. And I think there's something, I feel so blessed to be a part of that generation because I have an appreciation for technology, absolutely. And I, like you, couldn't live without my iPhone or, you know, a lot of my other devices. But I also am so appreciative that I grew up in a world where those things did not yet exist.
Yeah. We are that last generation, which is kind of sad because,
totally.
You know, there are a lot of young kids now that just, that's what they grew up with. And they don't know that there's a world where you have to go to the library to look up stuff or you can go outside and play and not have to like be on your phone and texting your friend and, you know, or riding your bike down to your friend's house to talk to them because you only have one phone line at your house. Like it just doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of sad.
And I have such great respect for parents who are sheltering their kids from those devices as long as they possibly can. Because I think that there is something really important about development outside of technology.
Totally. And technology obviously is amazing, but
yeah, for sure.
It's not everything.
Yeah, I think from an educational perspective alone, like I would love to go back through school now and see like what it's like to have an iPad in the classroom or, you know, those sort of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, I want to talk a little bit about you just completed work on your first feature film, which I'm so proud of you for. I guess you're in post-production right now, right?
We are, yeah.
Okay. We'll talk more about that. But first, kind of give us some insight into your background and maybe what inspired you to become a filmmaker.
Well, I'm one of those guys that knew he wanted to be a filmmaker ever since I was like probably 10 years old. I grew up watching, you know, I grew up in the 80s. So Back to the Future trilogy, Indiana Jones, E.T., you know, Die Hard when I started to get a little bit older, Jurassic Park, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, like the most amazing movies in the 80s and 90s. I grew up like just impacted me so much. And I think it's a weird movie to reference as the movie that like really triggered it for me. But I think it was just because of my age and the special effects in the movie. But when I walked out of Terminator 2, I was about 10 years old. And I remember this vividly, walking out of the theater, just my mind was blown in the film. Just the incredible visual effects in the film and the great story and action and everything mixed together. And something clicked in my mind. Like, wait, people actually make these things. These don't just pop out of thin air. Like, this is something I could probably do for a living. So ever since then, I've been on this high-speed trajectory of trying to become a filmmaker. And so, you know, from 10 on, I was making short films in the backyard, starring myself and my sister, and, you know, got my cousins involved into making movies. And then in junior high, I found out my high school had a TV program. So I joined that and did that for 4 years and made dozens and dozens of short films and did newscasts and hosted and acted and just did a little bit of everything. And then went to film school, went to Chapman University and studied film for 4 years. And then moved out to LA in 2004 and started working in post-production and became an editor. And so it's just every aspect of my career since I was 10 years old has been like, how do I get closer to making a living as a filmmaker? So, yeah. So, I mean, my goal the whole time was I want to direct my first feature film. And that was, you know, I had done tons of short films through the years and I wanted to do my first feature. And, you know, I've been in LA for now a little over 11 years. And so there are several projects that I've been attached to that I, you know, tried to get off the ground and never could. And Fear Inc. was the feature that ended up being my first. We shot it this summer. And it's a horror comedy, a dark comedy. And there was just something about the idea. We made a short film about a year and a half ago. And there was just something about the initial idea of the film that just sparked my interest. And, you know, I'm not a huge horror guy, but finding an idea in the horror genre that I knew was going to be easier to sell, an idea that I liked, I was like, this is it. This is the one that we're going to do. So, yeah. So we shot this summer and now we're in post-production.
Tell me kind of maybe what was the greatest challenge that you faced either before or during production?
Well, being my first feature film being attached as a director to a film that has no feature film credits is very, very challenging because nobody cares that I wanted to make my first feature film. So in order to get money to make the film, you know, we had to kind of scramble together to get the financing. And because of that, our budget had to be tiny. It had to be as small as it literally could be to make this film and make it well. And because no one wanted to give us money. So we kind of had to get the ball rolling on our own. And start casting and start asking people for help. And slowly but surely, we kind of put the pieces together. And it was very challenging because when you don't have money, you can't just go out and start hiring people and scheduling stuff. So it's like, you know, we are constantly in this battle of like, okay, what can we schedule and what can we plan now? So that way, somebody will want to give us a little bit more money and then we can schedule a little bit more and hire a little bit more and then someone else will give us money. And that's exactly what we did. We basically got enough money to start casting the film. And that was our first like, okay, if we start attaching actors, I think we could get more money. So we got enough money, so we knew we could attach actors. So we partnered with another production company that had a good relationship with other, with all the agencies and with a bunch of actors. And so we started setting up meetings and met with a bunch of actors and started attaching people. And we were right. We started getting a little bit more money after that and had enough money to shoot the film. And then we thought, okay, well, if we have enough money to shoot the film, then we could shoot it and I could probably edit it for free and get a little thing together that we could show people and then get a little bit more money that way. And that's exactly what we did. So it's kind of been like, wait for a little bit of money, then go and do what you can, and then wait for a little bit more money and then go and do what you can. So it's, you know, and I feel like that's probably most, in this day and age, it's probably most, you know, new filmmakers, unless you have a rich uncle, that's the way you have to do it.
Yeah. I love that because that's totally what this podcast is about. You know what I mean? Like I want to talk to people who are out there thinking differently and making life work. So I love that story. Was there something that maybe went particularly right or perfectly that you didn't expect but ended up working out?
It's funny because we had a tiny budget for this film, and you know, if a studio was to make the same exact film that we made, it would have cost easily 20 or 30 times the amount that we spent. But it looks and feels like it could have been made by a studio because we had a great team of people that came on board, loved the script, very experienced crew that made the film look like a studio quality film, which is great. But the funny thing is about, you know, budgets is like, since we were so restricted, we had to be really creative on how to do certain things, even how we cast. And it was such a happy sort of accident that we didn't have that much money and we ended up getting this cast together. We could have gone with huge, you know, famous names, which would have been great for selling the film, but because we had a smaller budget, we couldn't really afford to hire, you know, hugely successful, big, huge name actors that will sell your film. So we kind of went after TV actors that we really liked. And they ended up, the cast that we had in our film was just, there's four people that are the main cast members in the movie. And it was really difficult for us to cast because they had to be four, they're basically four best friends that looked like they could be about the same age and had a little bit, you know, they needed to have a lot of chemistry through the film. And we ended up casting these four actors that were just so incredible. They're all in a bunch of different TV shows and films and stuff. And it was just one of those things that, like, once we started filming, we were like, we couldn't have casted this movie better. They're perfect. And that was, you know, a combination of a restriction of our budget and just us kind of trying to be really creative with who we can afford to put in our movie. So
that's so cool. So I had a chance to visit the set. And I'm not sure if I'm in the final cut, but you might see me for a second on screen. Now, one of the things I noticed, though, was just it was a really laid-back vibe. And it kind of surprised me because, you know, you were a first-time feature filmmaker. And it just felt like everything was really organized and chill. And, like, how did you go about creating that vibe? And was that really what was going on behind the scenes?
So you were there on one of our crazier days, which is kind of funny that you say that. we were at this fun little haunted house location in North Hollywood, and that we had the most amount of actors that day. It was the first day out of our very short 15-day shoot where we weren't, basically the first 10 days we were in a house in Woodland Hills. So it was nice and cozy. We're at the same location every day for 10 days. And the first day that we were out and had to bring the trucks out and had to bring the gear out and had to be somewhere else was the day that you showed up. So it was a little frantic and crazy.
It didn't seem like it at all.
But yeah, so my thing is, like, you know, you hear these stories about directors that are crazy and intense and scream at people and, you know, and they go crazy long hours. And I've worked with executive producers that have been that way, you know, in my editing experience. And at the end of the day, I look at what I do as, like, we're creating entertainment. We're creating something that people at some point are going to hopefully sit down and watch and enjoy. And if you're killing yourself to create this content, and if you're not enjoying yourself creating it, that's going to reflect in the final product. And And that's what I believe, at least. And so to me, it's like, I told this to our cast and crew on the first day. You know, we had a big production meeting and I said, let's have fun, you guys. We're not curing cancer. We're making movies. So let's have a good time. If it gets too stressful, let's reevaluate what we're doing, because this is not like, I want to have a good time on set. And so I feel like that was kind of the vibe throughout the whole thing. It got stressful, of course, at certain points because of, you know, just schedule and budget and stuff, which is totally normal. But we all knew we were aiming towards creating something that was supposed to be entertaining and fun, and a good time. And if nobody's having a good time on set, it's like there's something wrong with this picture. So, and it's nice that you picked that up when you were there, because that's kind of, even on our most stressful, one of our most stressful days, it still was a pretty laid back vibe, which is cool.
Yeah, honestly, like I mean, I've been aware of the project for a long time. I saw the short, obviously, and, you know, Natalie, let me read the script before you guys started shooting. And I'm so excited for the, like, not just for me to see it, but for the world to see it, because I think it's such an awesome concept. And I don't know if maybe you want to talk a little bit about, give us like a brief overview of the story.
Yeah, no, totally. Okay. So the movie's called Fear Inc. And the concept is basically, it revolves around this company called Fear Inc. in the movie. And it's this company that you can hire to come out and scare you. For those of you that, you know, and this is a fictional company, but, you know, we're all obsessed. There's a lot of people in this country that are obsessed with going to haunted houses and watching horror films. And
Halloween in particular, it got worse. Like, I've never seen so many pop-up haunted houses that, like, are just taking it to a whole new level. But
it's,
sorry.
Yeah, it's no. It's crazy. And we're you know, Western culture is obsessed with getting scared.
Yeah.
And so for those that want an extreme experience, they can hire this company called Fear Inc. and they come out and scare the crap out of you. So this movie focuses around this group of four people that have a Fear Inc. experience, and they're not sure whether or not their experience is part of what they ordered, or if this is just a bunch of crazy people trying to, you know, get their jollies off by scaring the crap out of them or trying to hurt them. So, and it's funny because the original idea was pitched to me by Luke, who wrote the feature, my business partner. And when we were doing the short, he said, dude, so I've got this idea. I've got a friend who goes to all these haunted houses. He goes to Not Scary Farm and Universal, and he doesn't like any of them. He doesn't get scared at any of them. So he decided, let's go. I want to go to Blackout, which is, you know, downtown. You pay $100. You have to sign a waiver. They can touch you. They, like,
so crazy.
Yeah.
Doesn't, like, someone pick you up in a van, like an unmarked van in an alley somewhere?
It's crazy. It's for crazy people, Sean. And so totally. this guy asked Luke if Luke wanted to go with him, and Luke was like, no, I have no desire to go with this. So Luke ran into him a couple weeks later, and he was like, dude, how was Blackout? And this guy was like, it was fun, but it wasn't really worth the $100. And Luke was like, how fucking crazy are you? And so Luke told me the story and said, what if there was a company that you could hire? And I'm like, that's brilliant. Let's do it. So yeah. that was kind of how we ran with it. And we did the short and then, you know, expanded it into a feature.
Do you have like a favorite story from production that you want to share?
So we shot for 3 weeks. And as you can imagine, being a first-time filmmaker, going into this was incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
And there was a lot on the line for me as a filmmaker because, you know, you've got all this crew that are showing up to this project. You've got all these professional actors who have been in hundreds and hundreds of episodes of TV. They've worked with tons of people. They know how things are supposed to go. You've got all this money on the line. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I can easily screw this up and not get to do this ever again. And so I tried as hard as I could to spend every day just enjoying the experience. And it was, I mean, those 15 days, those 3 weeks, it was incredible. It was like camp. It was so much fun. And it felt like everybody was genuinely driving towards the same goal, which is, you know, to create this really fun movie and fun experience. And every day was great. And it felt like everyone was really proud of what we were creating. You know, it was one of those things where we had a, a guy on set. He's called a DIT, and he transfers all the footage from the camera that we're shooting and organizes it. And we had crew. I would walk by the DIT station every day, and you'd see crew guys like standing behind him trying to get a peek at the footage, which is like, you never see that on set, because this is, you know, these people that are working on set, they're professionals. They do this every single day, and they just kind of do their, they show up to set, they do their job, and they go home. And on this film, everyone was so excited to see what we were doing that they would try and sneak a peek at the footage when he was transferring stuff. And it was like, I realized at that point on set, I'm like, this is like, we're creating something really special here. People are really excited about what we're doing. And it felt that way through the whole production and until we wrapped. And our wrap day, it's funny, our cast and crew stuck around for a couple extra hours after this crazy shoot, 15 days of shooting, and we wrapped, and our, like, we broke out champagne and whiskey, and we're, like, we were shooting overnight, and it was like 6 a.m. and we were drinking, but people wanted to stay and hang out because it was like family. It was just a really cool, overall really, really cool experience.
I love that so much. What did you learn from this production as a first-time filmmaker that you will take with you on your next film?
I mean, too many things. Everything. I mean, the biggest thing I feel, you know, and the reason why I do what I do is because I feel like it's we, you know, filmmakers do have this incredible platform. You know, if you're a film director and you make a movie, you're creating a story that's typically between 1.5 to 2 hours to 2.5 hours, and you're getting people to sit and watch your content for that long. And if you think about it, how many other people have that sort of platform where you get somebody's attention for 2 hours at a time? Like,
politicians, not many in 2016.
Yeah, politicians don't really have that platform. I mean, nobody really, you know, TV and film really capture people's attention, and they, you know, people let you into their life and let you tell stories with them. And so to me, it's incredibly important if you're in entertainment to create content and be responsible and think about who's going to see what you're creating, and not just do it for money, or not just do it because someone's telling you to tell a certain story and you decide to do it because they told you to. I feel like it's a big responsibility. And so with this film, we spent a lot of time in development on the script and making sure what we are creating was something we as film fans would go out and see. And there are too many times, there's too many scripts I've read and too many films I've seen where it's like, you didn't spend enough time thinking about the script and working on this. And it's a shame because they go out and spend money, and people go and spend their money to see this film, these films and TV shows. And more often than not, it's a disappointment. And so I think on this, the reason we had such a great experience on set and the reason we're getting a great final product is because we spent a lot of time developing the script and really finding a story that meant something to us and that we wanted to share with the world. And it's a horror comedy. It's not like we're trying to tell, you know, an incredibly important story, but we wanted to make sure that even in that genre, we were telling something that meant something to us. And it worked in the sense that people read the script and wanted to be a part of it. And it's working because the final product is turning out to be better than we expected. And so I don't think, because this worked so well, I don't think hopefully we'll never go into another project without having really spent a good amount of time developing the script and getting it to a place where I'm like, this is something that's worth spending a year of my life on.
No, I was saying, it's funny. I wish you could see the next question that was actually on my screen, because I was going to ask you to talk a little bit about the responsibility that a filmmaker has to their audience in 2016. I know that for me, like, I love going to the movies, right? Like, it's one of my favorite things to do. I love the experience and just leaving the theater feeling like I escaped for 2 hours.
Right.
But I find I'm doing less and less of that today because movies are more expensive. Time is, you know, much more precious. And there's so few things out there that really capture my interest. And I think that's why I'm so excited about your film in particular, not just because I know you, but because I really think that it brings something unique to the landscape. And you were thoughtful with the story that you were telling. Can you talk a little bit more about the responsibility that, you know, a filmmaker has to their audience, especially today when you're competing with someone with so many other people for someone's attention?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, we talked about this earlier. We grew up in a time when there wasn't as much competition in film and TV. So the stuff that you saw come out was stuff that it felt like people really thought about, like, is this something we want to make? As a studio head, you know, they were thinking, are these the films that we want our studio to be branded with this year? And so we got these incredible stories in the 80s and 90s, and then all of a sudden the competition just went bonkers, and you had this big independent movement with all these independent filmmakers, which was amazing. And then the democratization of filmmaking with all these cheap cameras coming out and editing software and computers, and all of a sudden anyone can make a movie. And then with the internet, you've got YouTube, and all of a sudden the amount of content is just mind-boggling. It's like impossible to sift through all this content. So then now anything is being made. And so I feel like, as a filmmaker and as a production company, one of the big things that we've tried to focus on, even in our sketches that we've done for Funny or Die, it's we try to always go back to the root of, why are we creating this? We have no desire to just create content. We want to create content that's either saying something, or it's different, or it's unique, or weird, or satirical. And it's a story that we feel either is important or hasn't been told before. And that those are the concepts that we tend to latch onto and we decide to invest our time in. And it's just, it feels like that's not the case, as you said, most of the time. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's just because of the competition, if it's because there's so much out there that the studios decide we need to spend $150 million on every single movie because that's going to make the biggest splash and that's going to get people in the theater seats. And I get that. And I get that, you know, all the studios are essentially owned by huge corporations, and they've got to justify their bottom line. So I get it. But it's just sad when, you know, most experiences in the theater are just a major letdown. And most of the time, as a filmmaker, I can sit there and go, this comes down to you not spending enough time on the script. That's almost always is the case. And that part is the cheapest part of the process. And it boggles my mind that totally. With all the talent that is in this town and all the scripts that are floating around and all the employees that these studios have, that they can't figure out how to, out of the 20 to 25 films a year that each studio makes, that they can't figure out, you know, out of all that content, this is the best stuff that we want to make. It's just, it's crazy to me. It's just totally crazy. So, yeah. And you know, you're not going to go out there and hit a home run every time. Not every project is going to be for everybody. Our film certainly is, you know, there are going to be people out there that hate our film, and that's totally fine. At the end of the day, what it always came back to was, is this a film as filmmakers that we would go out and see? Would we be, if we saw this trailer, would we be excited about it? Would we want to pay $15 to go into a theater to see this movie? And anytime we made a change to the script, if it affected that in a negative way, we'd sit down and try and figure it out and try to make it better. And so, and I feel like it's showing. It's really a film that, that means a lot to us, and that's fun for us. And if it's successful, that's amazing. I hope it is. If it's not, that's okay too, because at least we made something that we're really, really proud of. And it's not a mishmash of a bunch of ideas. It's really a honed in idea that we really cared about.
I want to go back to technology for just a second and kind of the impact that it's had on the film industry. Where do you see things 5 years from now?
If I had a crystal ball, it's, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting landscape. As we were kind of going, you know, going into casting on this film, a lot of the conversations that kept coming up from other producers and some agents and management companies were, so what influentials do you have in this film? People kept saying that. I'm like, what are they talking about? And what they meant was, who, what YouTubers are you putting in your film?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's the next thing, is there's every major studio has a digital branch that they're trying to figure out this whole YouTube generation and how to market that in a bigger scale. And you've got, and it, no one's figured it out yet, because you've got movies like the Smosh Brothers or Smosh Movie or whatever that's called. And now I'm going to start dating myself because I'm not up on the YouTube generation, all these YouTubers, but you've got these movies that have come out that they've attached these YouTubers to and they haven't really performed. And the interesting thing is you've got these, you know, 8 to 13-year-olds that are driving this YouTube generation, that are watching all this YouTube content. But when they've got products to sell or when they've got movie tickets to sell, they don't follow through. They like sitting on their computer and watching stuff for free. And advertisers are finding that no one's buying their products. And, you know, it's not translating to movie ticket sales and it's not translating to TV ratings. And so I think there's something interesting going on there. It's just a matter of who's going to figure out how to really capitalize on that generation in a way that doesn't totally kill the movie experience or the TV experience. But I think, you know, it's hard to imagine the future of entertainment without thinking about that in some respect. Like, how is that going to work? You know, how is the new Apple TV going to affect how we watch TV? You know, now that you can download an app on your TV and that anybody can create, is that going to hurt sales on cable companies when you buy these packages of TV channels that you never watch just so you can get, you know, one movie channel or whatever? So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, and I think my prediction is that the people that really focus on telling good stories are gonna have to go through the trenches, but I think eventually they're gonna be the ones that rise to the top, because ultimately people are gonna be like, all right, enough. We want to see good stuff. We don't want to see a bunch of crap anymore.
I want to talk a little bit about how fatherhood has changed kind of the way that you see the world and what impact it's had on you so far. I know you're a new father, but
yeah, no, I'm totally new, less than 3 months in, so I don't know anything. But what I do know is, you know, the second my son was born, everything changed for me. I can't think of a moment in my life, and I'll probably never have it again, and, you know, unless I have another kid, you know, that was more profound, seeing this life that you created, living and breathing, and that you're now responsible for, and everything you do and say, this person's going to be watching, and growing up into an adult and becoming hopefully a productive member of society. All of a sudden, it just changes how you think about things. And I haven't really figured out what that means for me yet, because, like I said, I'm a brand new father. But I do know that nothing, you know. In this past year, I've had a lot of amazing things happen in my career and some really fun stuff. But having a kid and getting to spend time with him is that stuff can completely disappear. And this is like, it, you know, I wake up every morning and I get to sit and hold my son and we get to watch the news and, you know, I have breakfast while just sitting there with him, and that's like my favorite part of the day. It's incredible. And getting to experience my wife through the raising of our child is a whole new like experience on our relationship, and it's incredible. It's challenging and it's difficult, but it is really, like all the cliches, it is the most amazing thing in the world. And I'm super excited to watch him grow up and see what he gets interested in and what he cares about, and get to have conversations with him, and I don't know. It's really, really incredible.
Awesome stuff. Now, the reason I started this podcast, I wanted to challenge the idea of living the status quo. So how do you see the world and those of us living in it evolving in a way that is challenging that? And how can those of us that have this sort of awareness around it help to contribute?
Wow.
Big question, I know.
That is a big question. When I was young, I wanted two things more than anything. I wanted to have a family and I wanted to be a filmmaker. Those are two things that I knew as a kid were things that were going to mean a lot to me and that I was going to strive to get that. And the funny thing is I really got to have both of those in the same sort of time frame. You know, I had a son 2 weeks after we wrapped on my first feature film, which is crazy.
That's crazy, by the way.
Yeah, it's insane. And I, you know, and neither of those things happened overnight. And neither of them were easy, and they both take an incredible amount of work and patience. And I think it really comes down to figuring out what it is as a human being you want to contribute to the world, what it is that you have as a talent or as a gift or as a passion. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, it literally could be anything. I think if you really think about the stuff that you care about and the thing that you want to do with your life, if you go after it, and this, you know, sounds cheesy and cliche, but, you know, anybody really, if they focus and work hard and stick to it, can have a life that they want to have. And it's, my life does not look like at all what I imagined when I was younger, but it's better and it's different and it's, you know, and I think if you just boil your life down to the stuff that you really care about and really work hard to go after it, and you deal with the punches and you deal with the negatives and you deal with the difficulties and you evolve and adapt, then I think, you know, eventually, and if there are things that you don't like about the world and you want to challenge and you want to fix, and that's part of the stuff that you're talented in and the gifts that you have, then you should keep pushing forward. And eventually people are going to listen to you. And if you stick around long enough, you know, you're going to become older and wiser, and your words are going to mean more than they did when you were younger. And, you got to try and go after the life that you really, really want. And I've always really strived for that. And, like I said, it doesn't look like what I always imagine it to be. But when I wake up every morning and I think about what I have and the stuff I have to live for and the things that I still want to do, it gets me excited. And I keep going into work and I keep working hard and I keep, you know, dealing with stress and I keep dealing with the difficult things, because I know at the end of the day, I'm trying to push towards something that's bigger and better than me. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but...
It makes complete sense. What is your definition of success, and have you achieved it?
My definition of success really changes. It evolves constantly. I get asked this question a lot, actually. And if you would have asked me this question when I first moved to LA 11 years ago, I would have said... success to me means that I'm making a living as a film director and I have a lot of money and I'm winning awards and people love the content that I'm creating. And now that I've been doing this for 11 years and it's taken me a long time to kind of make a living doing, I'm still struggling to make a living doing what I love. But to me, success really is if I can take care of my family and I get to do what I love every day, then I'm successful. And if I get to keep doing this every day until the day that I die, then that to me would be success. And of course there's big dreams mixed in that and there's things I want to do. And, I feel like I'm already successful because I love waking up every day. I love the fact that I've got a wonderful wife and we've got a house together and we've got a little kid and we get to take care of him and we've got two awesome dogs and I've got a really great family that loves us and supports us, and a lot of great friends that we get to hang out with and do great things with. And I have a company with a business partner who's a close friend of mine who, you know, we don't make a lot of money, if any money, doing what we do, but we love doing it. And we get to work with great people. And that's kind of, for me, that's all there really is to it. If I get to keep doing this, then I'm super duper happy.
What do you hope will be your legacy as both a filmmaker and a human being?
Kind of what we've been talking about. If people look back and see that I kind of stuck to my guns and never sold out and just did the stuff that I really enjoy doing and really stuck to kind of offering the world my talents as they are, not try to be something that I'm not. If people look back and see that, Vince was a guy that created some really cool stuff, and you know, he never really sold out, and he treated people with respect. And I think if people are left thinking that, then I'd be happy. If we could get more out of that, if I get to be a part of bigger things, I think that would be amazing. I have no idea what's in store for me, and I don't. I feel like I'm still too young to have a huge desire to change the world, because I'm young and stupid and don't know a lot of things. But I do know that if I keep doing what I love, and I keep really caring about the things that I care about, I feel like eventually people are going to listen and see, and hopefully it's going to impact people in a positive way.
Awesome. Vinny, thank you so much for sharing your story with everybody today. I'm so appreciative of your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah. Tell us where we can connect with you on the web.
So we've got a website. You can go to lonesuspect.com. It's lonesuspect.com. It's our production company's website. You can see what we're working on, and send us a message if you want. And I think we've also got a Twitter Lone Suspect handle, @LoneSuspect, that you can follow to kind of keep up to date on our stuff.
All right, I want to thank Vince for joining me today. Now, don't forget to check out Fear Inc. I've included the links for all the streaming services where you can watch over at thinkoutsidethelines.com. I'd also like to thank you for listening. If you're enjoying the show, I'd love if you'd subscribe, share, and rate us on iTunes. All of those things help my show out a lot. Now, you can find the links for everything we talk about in the show notes, which can always be found over at thinkoutsidethelines.com. Until next time, go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.